My message today is entitled Easter Implications. Even with the gruesome reality of Jesus' suffering on Good Friday, I can't help but believe our modern understanding of Holy Week and Easter has undersold the dangerous realities of the implication of Easter. The Easter story should leave us all sort of quivering in our boots. It should also, though, inspire us to acts of great love that might ultimately put us at great risk. To truly grasp the implications of Easter, the somewhat terrifying at times implications of Easter in contemporary society, let's look at the historical realities of Holy Week and Easter. As I actually mentioned last Easter, Jesus' entry into Jerusalem, humbly riding into town on the back of a previously unridden donkey, with people gathering around him, greeting him and singing and shouting, "Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord," that actually signals to us that Easter is going to be a story about confronting the powers that be. You see, while the small group that gathered may have been calling Jesus king, his entry into Jerusalem was in stark contrast to the actual entry of the ruler of the region, perfect Pontius Pilate, basically the governor of the area. As Rome's official authority, when he came through, he would have paraded through in front of the city's gates and on a mighty steed surrounded by Roman military. So in this, our Easter story, the confrontation of the powers that be begin with a sort of quiet announcement. It happens as folks are gathering into Jerusalem to observe the Passover. This is a point not to miss. They were there to celebrate the Passover, the annual commemoration of Moses leading the Israelites out of Egypt to escape a repressive, enslaving government. The confrontation of the powers that be at Easter begins with a quiet announcement, and it happens in a setting that recalls the power of the people when it comes to escaping tyrannical and oppressive regimes. Now, as you might imagine, Rome, actually being a repressive government, was somewhat weary of this kind of celebration. The Romans didn't exactly want the Hebrew people to get any ideas about another exodus, this time from the occupying Roman government. Given those simple realities at the beginning of this story, we begin to understand how the Easter story may actually be quite a dangerous story. So after his humble entrance into Jerusalem, Jesus does something that ultimately seems to be out of character. He enters into the temple courtyard and strikes at the heart of one of the religious and political institutes' main sources of financial well-being. You see, the money changers and the traders who would set up shop in the temple used their monopoly to take advantage of the mostly poor travelers who came into the city to pay their taxes. And since the religious institute and the government were closely tied at that time, Jesus' cleansing of the temple was surely the beginning of the end. Not only did he set out to flipping tables on those who used their religious and political places of power to take advantage of folks who already had too little, he did it directly under the watchful eyes of a significantly increased military presence. You see, like I said, this was Passover week. A week that recalls the power of the people when it comes to escaping tyrannical and oppressive regimes. And Rome, recognizing that they themselves were an oppressive regime, well, they would bring in extra forces to Jerusalem during this week to ensure that things remained peaceful. But let's be honest. When a government brings in heavily armed police to keep things peaceful, the only people they're trying to give peace is themselves. A little peace of mind. Many of those soldiers would have been watching over the courtyard from atop a very large wall that actually surrounded the entire courtyard. And Jesus then marches into the center of their prophet center, knowing that he was under the watchful eyes of the government's hired henchmen. And he started significantly disturbing the comfortable during a week that the government was highly sensitive to things that were disturbing. Basically, in this one move, he's gone from sort of an annoying sideshow, along with all the other seemingly supernaturally empowered teachers of his time, to being a viable threat to the state. The powers that be began to conspire to remove this thorn from their side. From this point on, the storyline gives us a reality check. It gives us a reality check as to how far the powers that be are willing to go to protect their status and their wealth. It's a story. It's a story that continues to echo in the world today. We can look at the life story of Dr. Martin Luther King and remember how far American politicians and some of the people were willing to go to obstruct African Americans' voting and civil rights. And we can even see it today in federal and state elections where some folks are using their lives of wealth and privilege to impede the rights of those who frequently don't have the means to do much about it. Confronting the powers that be is dangerous work. It should not be taken lightly. It can be unsettling, unnerving, and downright frightening. The powers that be will not go down gently. They never do. They will use every tool available to them to maintain their status, their wealth, and their control. And in confronting them, we risk our good names, our freedom, and even at times our lives. Yet, we are morally obligated to confront them. We are called to do it lovingly so, but confront them we must because they will not relinquish their power gently. Or as Dr. Martin Luther King put it, freedom is never voluntarily given by the oppressor. It must be demanded by the oppressed. The Palm Sunday to Easter story is a not so gentle reminder of how much is required to resist powerful and oppressive forces. And it's a reminder of how far the powers that be will go to protect their power. Now, the good news is that Easter's conclusion is a reminder that it's also the story of how far love will go for the sake of divine justice. Which brings us, or at least brings me, to the question, why then did Jesus die on a cross? I suspect that question has been asked since the actual day that Jesus died on a cross. Now, the most common answer from most Christians is he died on a cross to pay for our sins. A little something we overly educated folks like to call penal substitutionary atonement. But it turns out that penal substitutionary atonement is actually a relatively recent concept. In fact, it only became part of the Christian teaching about 1600 years after Jesus' actual death, so less than 500 years ago. I have to say, I 100% do not believe that God was offering up Jesus as some sacrifice to pay for anything. You see, Jesus knew what he was doing. He knew that he would be seen as a threat. He knew where it would lead, to the cross. I'd even argue that he had known about this for a little while. Where he was going, what he was going to do, and where it would likely lead. Three different times before he ever entered into Jerusalem on the back of that donkey, Jesus predicted that he would be given the death penalty. Capital punishment. Death by crucifixion. No one has greater love than this if they lay down their life for their friends. Why did Jesus die on the cross? Jesus died on the cross because he offended those in power. Jesus died on the cross because he challenged the status quo. Jesus died on the cross because love would not sit silently by as those who had too little were stepped on, used, and abused by those who had so very much. Why did Jesus die on a cross? Jesus died on a cross to show us what love looks like in action. He came to teach us what the fullness of love looks like in action. It looks like healing people who are hurt. It looks like feeding people who are hungry. It looks like loving people who are shunned. It looks like defending people who are overwhelmed. It looks like friends sharing food together. It looks like grieving over loss or hurt. It looks like a conversation over a drink of cool water. It looks like helping the celebration along at a wedding. It looks like helping the lost regain their meaning. It looks like a man hanging from a tree. Because the threat of death from the most powerful government on the face of the planet was not enough to subdue his love for those who were being taken advantage of. The Easter story teaches us that where there is love, there are no enemies. Death is never final. Hope is never lost. There is always a new way, a new path, a new life. It teaches us that in the long run, the oppressive systems of this world, the powers that be, do not stand a chance against love. It teaches us that you cannot nail love down. We tried that once and it did not work. We need to be reminded to not just get caught up in the story that happened back then, a long time ago. We need to see that while it is a story from way back then, it is also a story that is possible in every moment of our lives. We need Easter to remind us that we need resurrection in our life. Easter should remind us that we are all called to live resurrected lives. You see, Easter is not just about Jesus, it's about us. It's not just about death, it's about life. Easter is not just about the past, it's about the future. It's not about the story of a resurrection that happened then. It's about the resurrections that are happening now. Ultimately, Easter is about how hope breaks into a world that can seem at times overwhelming and oppressive. It's about how hope can and will overcome death, and not simply actual death, but rather the metaphorical death that confront life every day. It's about how those deaths aren't the endings of things, but the beginning of things. It's about how we only think that they are endings of things because we set in our minds our own idea of where we are going, what things look like, and what they should be like. With love, death is never final. With love, hope is never lost. With love, there's always a new path, a new way, a new life. in the end. While Easter is a story about confronting those who would use their power to oppress others and the real risks that go along with confronting them, ultimately, though, Easter is a story of the resurrecting power of love and of hope.